demon behind. Tossing fire, leaving Babylon trying to escape his futile. Who child is time to jump in too wild? That's why we got more than two styles. To adapt in the situation, two child. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try to make my.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things, but in the marketplace all the time. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:08 here in the city of Philadelphia, in still in shelter in place mode here, and we're in another mode too. Home confinement mode, quarantine mode. 6 o'clock quarantine because of the insurrection going on in this city. We'll get a chance to talk about that later on when we transition into open forum. But we're scheduled to have special guests join us. Organizer and president of the National Black Farmers Association, Dr. John Boyd, is scheduled to be with us in the 7 o'clock hour. And we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:13 here in the city of Philadelphia. Before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Considering I'm, you know, doing all right. I'm, you know, hopefully more baffled than most of the Time for Awakening audience on in relationship to what our next steps. And like you said, we were under house arrest. Now we're under house arrest plus house 6 o'clock. Curfew lockdown, but I think we, the moment, and even in our discussion tonight, with Dr. Boyd, it's important to kind of like really place it in context of, not just where we go from here, but what are the lessons we need to learn as, the whole, Western world and American political and economic economy is being reshifted, and we're part of it. And this being a manifestation of that, of our general health. Where do we go from here in relationship to reshaping? I think it's important to bring up in its many various manifestations compared to just one thing or another. So it's looking forward for tonight's discussion.
You know, our guest this evening, we were scheduled to have organizer and president of the National Black Farmers Association, Dr. John Boyd, is supposed to be with us. And he hasn't called in as of yet. John Boyd is a busy man, and he got that 800-acre farm down there in Virginia. But he said he was going to be with us this evening. I don't know what happened. It might be a mishap. If we have to reschedule him, we'll do that, or he might still call in. So we'll kind of play it by ear, but we can always transition into speaking with the listening audience. There's a lot going on, and we can do that. Any callers that was interested in hearing Mr. Boyd talk about the state of our farmers, you can still hang with us and maybe get involved in the conversation if you choose to by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Of course, we'll keep the lines open just in case he calls in late. If he doesn't get to us this evening for this evening's program, we'll definitely reschedule him so he can be with us, if not next week, the week after, to get him kind of back into the rotation again. So again, any of the callers that was listening for Dr. Boyd to come on with us this evening, we'll still be waiting on him. But if he doesn't get to us for whatever has happened or whatever did come up, we'll reschedule him to be on the program within the next couple of weeks. Transition into open forum conversation, and callers can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. Richard,
yes.
We just talked Friday and about things happening, and this was before the scheduled protest that was here. I think they had the protest in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And it morphed into a violent interaction. And I mentioned on the program Friday, I said that could be any city in the United States, if you recall the conversation.
Yeah.
And here it is, several cities since Friday's broadcast has had demonstrations that have turned into violent insurrections. And also something I mentioned on Friday's program that seemed to come true in Philadelphia. I don't know about other cities. I've seen some of the television reports from other cities, but it's kind of odd to me that after Saturday's demonstrations that turned what they consider violent, that evening, black elected officials was called to the podium along with the mayor here in Philadelphia, which I expected. We talked about this Friday. If anything mm-hmm. was to happen, this the playbook. Europeans always use this playbook. They call out black elected officials and ministers to calm the people down. So here was a whole string of black elected officials, including the new police commissioner and others, and men of the cloth, ministers, telling our people to stop, you're tearing our city up, go home, this, that, and the other. But if you look at the situation, Richard, now, number one, before we kind of talk about this, because it kind of goes in a lot of different directions, they mentioned before that in some of the other cities, and it came true here in Philadelphia, that people involved in at least getting the violence started was not organizers of some of these demonstrations, because in a lot of cities, especially the major cities, a lot of the organizers were black.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned that a lot of other folks, insurrection groups, got involved.
Mm-hmm.
Antifa, Proud Boys, Klan, anybody. Insurrectionists, they considered them. And some of your white politicians even acknowledge that they were involved and got the violence started. And it kind of morphed into what we have seen in these cities. And, you know, I want to ask a question in regards to that during our conversation in reference to it. But I just thought it was really strange that from what I've seen here in Philadelphia, at least early on, a lot of that violence, setting cars on fire, throwing bricks through cops' windows, confronting the police, it was white folks.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the elected officials and ministers, and there was a whole litany of them, the only two white folks I've seen on that podium was the white mayor here in Philadelphia and his managing director. All these other folks were black.
Mm-hmm.
So where was the white politicians here in the city of Philadelphia? You got several of them. You got a few of Hispanics and a couple of Asians. No other nationality was on that stage admonishing their people. And the majority of the people out there with the violent reactions and violence were white.
Hmm.
See, our people got to stop that. But see, that's what you expect out of this black mixed leadership class.
And, you know, the one thing that you bring up and how they responding is, as you always say, you know, because I don't watch television, so I don't get a, unfortunately, I'm one of them old, I'm Facebook addicted, right? Since I threw my television away, many years ago. But, you know, the thing that you say that these guys speak to, and I think that, you know, in the sense of, and I'm trying to frame this in relationship to where we started 10 weeks ago, that the country got a, from the invisible enemy called coronavirus 19, that the country came to the public health establishment came to the conclusion that Black America had a serious health challenge that was taking our lives, you know, this virus was taking our lives more readily than others. So, but till now, and especially now, this being another manifestation, and you mentioned about these Black politicians, they're talking about the saving of the city, but there is no talk about, how we as a people have to be saved.
I know.
And that, you know, the whole thing of, you know, the police murder, you know, of George Floyd was another manifestation of the health crisis that we live in that precipitated this here, these events, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not speaking to that. They're speaking to how do we save property, right? Or businesses, which they closed down because of the war they was having on this invisible enemy called Corona 19 virus.
Well,
they closed them down.
Well,
right?
I know you expected that.
Right.
Europeans always change the narrative and get some black people to speak to that issue. I don't give a damn about what they did in Center City last night. I really don't. But you had black elected officials after black elected official and minister after minister get up there and talk about, oh, you're tearing up our city. You right. can't do this to our city. What are you talking about? Go look at some of the neighborhoods that your churches are in and that you claim to represent. And take a look at some of the areas where your constituents live.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing that went on in Center City last night, they had to go down there and board up all the busted windows. All this graffiti was all over. And trash was all over. It looked like some of the districts that those black elected officials was up there screaming about, don't do the Center City.
Mm.
But their districts looked like that. Full of boarded up houses, trash, and graffiti. And you're going to tell people don't come down Center City. Number one, since they didn't rebuild that Center City area, they don't want black folks down there anyway.
Right.
And that's what a lot of that anger was about. Sure, the white folks got it started. They got the party started. They got the party started, but then some of our young people got involved.
Who, as you know, as you say, when you talk about the environment we live in, the physical manifestation of the environment, but you know, even young people, and this is the difficult conversation. Difficult conversation and thinking that I need you and the Time for Awakening audience to work. Oh, help me work through, because we cannot blame them for the actions that they take when we see an example that, say, you know, one of the biggest things I've seen in two areas, you know, sneakers become the major focus, or clothes, or fans, you know, operating fans become what people start to take out. As these quote unquote looting occur, we can't blame that when we know, especially for young people, the psychological, the economical, and the social trauma that they're under, especially 12 to 18, is off the hook, because there is no program that is being developed by us or the city to really address their challenge, other than the last program was for the last generation to lock them up.
And keep in mind, Richard, that for the past going on 3 months now, the young people have been out of school.
Right.
And it's been no education. They talking about this online stuff. They already admitted that over 50% of the black children in public schools don't even have internet access.
Right.
So ain't been no learning going on. They've been sheltered in place. They've been at home, no school. It's too much. And our people are, you know, they don't try to change the narrative to protest for George Floyd. This is not about George Floyd. George Floyd, he was just one of the recent men that have been murdered. It's not about Floyd. And let me play something at the Richard, while we're talking about this, I think callers have jumped online already. You can, while we're in this open dialogue, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Because, you know, I was watching the television, and they had the mayor of Atlanta get on there and address what was going on in her city. And she invoked, talking about King, saying that he wouldn't have subscribed to this. Now I'm listening to her. And then I turned over to another station when they was doing the local stuff. And they had black politicians, black clergy, and they had Rodney Muhammad, who here in Philadelphia is the head of Mosque number 12, I think that is. And he's the head of the NAACP here in the city. And he mentioned about Dr. King. But he mentioned about other folks being involved in some of the demonstrations. The thing that I'm looking at, Richard, is, you know, the constant mention in reference to King and some of these violent reactions to what's going on here to our people in this country. King admitted several times that he was using nonviolence as a strategy. But you could see that in his later years that he was starting to speak against that strategy because he seen that it wasn't working with Europeans. And he mentioned that in some of the clips that I play.
Mm-hmm.
Because they was only willing to go but so far. So if you got somebody that you're trying to so-called negotiate with that's not willing to be flexible or want to give lip service, then your strategy is eventually going to change. He knew this. He was an intelligent man. But it's just odd to me that some of these people, almost 50 years since he's been murdered by the same government that they want to protect as elected officials, by that same government, you're going to invoke some of the things that man stated. Let me play what she said in reference to what's going on here. And get our listening audience opinion on what she's stating here. This is Tamika Mowry, and she spoke in Minnesota the other day.
Is because this city, this state, would prefer preserving that white nationalism and that white supremacist mindset over arresting, charging, and helping to convict four officers who killed a black man. That is the reality of what we're dealing with. This is not just a few cops doing things across the country. This is not a good cop versus bad cop situation. This is Ahmaud Arbery being shot down by white men on the streets of Georgia. Breonna Taylor being killed in her home. This is in New York City, where we were until freedom. We were just in New York fighting the police officers who, in the name of social distancing, were damn near killing black young people on our streets. This is a coordinated activity happening across this nation. And so we are in a state of emergency. Black people are dying in a state of emergency. We cannot look at this as an isolated incident. The reason why buildings are burning are not just for our brother George Floyd. They're burning down because people here in Minnesota are saying to people in New York, to people in California, to people in Memphis, to people all across this nation, enough is enough. Yeah. And we are not responsible for the mental illness that has been inflicted upon our people by the American government, institutions, and those people who are in positions of power. I don't give a damn if they burn down Target. Because Target should be on the streets with us calling for the justice that our people deserve.
Talk about it, Tamika.
Where was AutoZone at the time when Philando Castile was shot in a car, which is what they actually represent? Where were they? So if you are not coming to the people's defense,
that's right,
then don't challenge us when young people and other people who are frustrated and instigated by the people you pay, you are paying instigators to be among our people out there throwing rocks, breaking windows, and burning down buildings. And so young people are responding to that. They are enraged, and there's an easy way to stop it. Arrest the cops. Charge the cops. Charge all the cops. Not just some of them. Not just here in Minneapolis. Charge them in every city across America where our people are being murdered. Charge them everywhere. That's the bottom line. Charge the cops. Do your job. Do what you say this country is supposed to be about, the land of the free for all. It has not been free for black people, and we are tired. Don't talk to us about looting. Y'all are the looters. America has looted black people. America looted the Native Americans when they first came here. So looting is what you do. We learned it from you. We learned violence from you. We learned violence from you. The violence was what we learned from you. So if you want us to do better, then damn it, you do better.
Richard.
She is powerful. You know.
Well, listen, she hit home. She hit a home run on everything she stated.
Oh, yeah.
On everything she stated.
Oh, yeah.
On everything that she stated. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the thing that struck me, that using the action, you know, of the police, that her, and that this is a coordinated activity.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why that resonated so much with me, because in relationship, I mean, that phrase, that principle, if we look through the economic, the political, the you know, the whole thing of dealing with the social relationship, and I mean, this country is engaged in a coordinated activity to reshape itself, and the health condition of what the police inflict on us is another manifestation of showing of how it's being, I mean, that's being coordinated, because it's happening. We're saying that these things has just been, this is an ongoing thing, coordinated. That's like, to me, that's like the whole thing about, you know, people using lynching, right? It wasn't just happens, individual actions at different places at different times. These things are too timely and too close together to be perceived as just random acts of violence by individual police officers. In that sense, our health condition is too severe to be considered that just individuals randomly are not taking care of themselves. It's a systemic, coordinated effort to have Black people, particularly. I don't, other people, they got to deal with what they're dealing with. But when we look at Black people's condition, that this is a systemic, coordinated effort to have us have these kind of manifestations. Listen, that was powerful.
I agree with her. Listen, now, she mentioned about the coordinated activity in regards to those protesters out there, right, that was involved.
Right.
Now, let's take apart what she said. I want the listening audience, Time for Awakening, to kind of look at what she's stating. Because, you know, I'm looking at it when I look at some of the protests. And what I don't like personally is our people out there marching with those other folks. If those other nationalities want to march against their police, because they don't seem to be upset with the police no other time. Any other time, the police is their friend. They're the heroes. You see all these commercials on the television. Sometimes you look at the news, they doing all that stuff, a kiss a cop, and they love the police. White folks don't have no problem with the police. But when something happens, you got a fraction of them that want to jump out there with Black folks. Mm-hmm. If they want to protest the cops, do it on your own. Set up your own protests. March in your own communities against the police. I don't necessarily like the fact that some of our people allow these people to march with them. That's just me personally. Some people might not have a problem with it. I do. But the thing is that what she stated about a coordinated effort. Now, I want the Time for Awakening audience to put their thinking cap on. If this system, Europeans in particular, have admitted that on their forces, on their police forces all across this nation, mm-hmm, you have white extremists, Proud Boys, Klan members, Antifa, whoever. You have them on these forces. They've already admitted it. They already admitted that these people are part of their law enforcement. If that's the case, what were they doing in those protests, mm-hmm, yesterday, starting violence? See, what we got to understand is before white folks do anything in regards to our people, it's plans and strategies. Some of our people don't strategize when we in a coordinated effort that these whites jump in. Some of our people are so happy to see whites involved with them. It's like, oh, they're involved. They're so happy. But you got to put your thinking cap on. If these people are involved in law enforcement already, what the hell are they doing out there with you? What is their motive to be out there with you? What is their motive throwing bricks, starting fires, attacking the police? What is their motive to be out there with some of our young people? Because it ain't older folks out there necessarily. What is their motive? Oh, is their motive to stop violence? Is their motive they want to see justice done to Black people? White extremists? Proud Boys? Klan? They want justice for Black people? Then why are they out there in the street trying to start violence, incite violence with cops, with you there? Unless they want to use you for pawns. Unless they got another objective for having to be out there with you. What is their objective? Time for Waking audience might be different than other listening audiences. They might already have their thinking caps on. But if you don't, I'd like you to get involved and answer that question for me. If Europeans had already admitted that these extremists are on these police forces, then what was their objective in being out there with our young people and getting the violence started, getting the party started, so to speak? That's, I'm just curious about that, Richard.
And that's just one segment, because the, you know, the anarchist is another segment that's present of what, you know, now of white anarchists that have a serious anti-structural state objective in relationship to the dismantling of the state as it is, you know, and have and utilizing the issue of black people's pain to be able to exert themselves in it. And don't forget the white socialists who have another class projection in this. So it's a lot of, when we say historically white organizational or ideological thrusts that have utilized black experience, black pain to cover their engagement. It's a lot of these three themes that, you know, as far as group that are part of this, they call it movement, maybe, or actions, you know, destructions, fires. And it still goes to that question, why are they there?
Let's go. Let's go. Before we go to North Carolina, who's up first at the plate, for the callers that was tuned in to hear organizing president of the National Black Farmers Association, Dr. John Boyd, who was scheduled to be with us at 7 o'clock. I don't know what happened, but maybe he'll still call in for tonight's program. If not, we're going to make sure that we try to reschedule him for sometime within the next 2 weeks to be back on the program or to be on the program. But again, he still might call up. Until then, we'll continue an open dialogue, and you can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Let's go to BTR, Brother Scotty in North Carolina. Scotty?
Yes, can I be heard, Elliot?
Yes, sir.
Richard.
I can hear you.
Yeah,
hear you loud and clear.
You asked a good question, and you put a challenge out there. And, you know, I'm constantly...
Wait a minute. You got... Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm constantly having my thinking cap on. You know, as I am a writer and a content producer like you, and then I've been on this world 53 years and a student of history and different, you know, philosophies, different tactics of the oppressor and different tactics of the oppressed. But if I had to just tell people what philosophy I follow, it's simply the philosophy that Malcolm X developed prior to him being murdered by members of the Nation of Islam, the FBI, and the NYPD. But the what he was espousing then in terms of what he foresaw future conflicts to be, he said it's not going to be a war black versus white. It's going to be the oppressed versus the oppressor, okay? And so I follow his philosophy, man, and I have to say the evidence is out there. Now, cynically, I could say that how are these protests ours? Those are their police, like you said. And if they of the opinion that the police did something wrong and they want to go down there and tear down and blow up or whatever they feel is necessary, by any means necessary, like Malcolm X, to show how they think what happened was wrong and was not an act of justice, then it's, some people look at it like this day country. And so who are we to say, you know what I'm saying? And then also, you know, Elliot, more than black folks is getting killed out here by police. I live in a rural county, predominantly black, and thankfully a lot of people ain't getting killed, but some white boys didn't got killed by police here. Maybe 2 in 10 years. But this, you know, this isn't as populated as in a city where predominantly our people are. Predominantly, you probably even got a black police chief. You probably even got a black and Hispanic and other non-white, as we saw the Asian, you know, sit up there and tell people it wasn't his job to do CPR on Mr. Floyd. So I have to go with Mr. X there and can't look at this in terms of black and white. Even Mr. Fuller talk about justice versus non-justice. And so I ain't got a problem with white people burning down nothing. I hear people talking about, well, what's the purpose of burning down a store and you're buying, you know, then you're burning down your own stuff. No, they not. No, they are not. We, the 1% own all that. Anybody that know how this country work know that business owners and even some of these small business owners in little towns and communities or in cities contribute to the tax base that pay the police to protect their property and not your life. With the Supreme Court said that a cop's job is not to protect your life. And so that little Asian cop was right when he said, it's not my job to do CPR on him. We're told that they're training CPR and they're first responders and they're out here to save people. But he showed you behind, you know, the attitude of many of them. It ain't his job. And the Supreme Court said it ain't his job. His job is to enforce the law. And so who are the lawgivers? Okay. And so we all wrapped up in this, man. You got the Black Political Caucus. Well, what is it, the Congressional Black Caucus? This is on them. This is on all anybody that's in a position of power who have been just pushing for half measures. Some of them even voted for Biden's crime bill, and they all behind Biden right now, who I would say laid the seeds for what we've been seeing out here in terms of mass increase of prison slavery because of him. And then black Democrats, and we allow the media to define things, and we don't really think about it and come up with our own perspectives, and it's easy to fall into old narratives and what have you. But I'm glad. And then when they burned down the store, think about that. I heard a Target was burned down. Target uses prison slave labor. All right. What do they pay their workers? It ain't a livable wage. What do you think these young people been out there fighting for, you know, during this primary before the DNC once again shoved a shiv in the back of Bernie Sanders, who is a coward, by the way. But the plans and the people he had around him to put them plans together was the plans that would address a lot of this stuff. But so they told the young people no, and the young people like now out there in them streets destroying stuff. If they destroy a store that's using prison slave labor that exploits a lot of exports, no imports, a lot of the stuff they selling to us and everybody else in this country from overseas, from their so-called enemies, China, where they know it's real cheap labor. You can get cheap labor to make your Jordans, and then we'll go out here and spend $200 for a pair of tennis shoes that we only going to wear, you know, maybe once or twice a week. I don't know. Man, we all caught up in this. We all culpable. It is not as simple as black versus white. Because how many of them black cops, man, we seen Walter Scott and that black cop back up that white cop and say, yeah, he and stood there as he planted that taser on him after he done shot him in the back. That black cop didn't do no CPR on Walter Scott or check his pulse to see if he was alive. Well, he saw them bullet holes in his back, but then he lies on his report to back up the white cop. So I just, you know, the Black Panther Party, which was influenced by Malcolm X, and I always go back to Malcolm X. I think, you know what I'm saying, that even if you ain't want to collaborate with non-black people, I'm not going to sit up here and condemn and criticize. And if they attacking slave catchers, if they killing slave catchers because a couple of slave catchers got killed or whatnot, man, I'm just like sitting here waiting for the revolution to pop out. And I think if this is a revolution, that Malcolm gonna be my guiding blueprint, okay? Because I'm surrounded by white folks up here And so I better have some allies, and I got some pretty good neighbors, but I don't trust nobody, and we can't even trust nobody black. That's just a shame, man. But thank you allowing me to share, you know, my perspectives on this. I always fall back to Malcolm.
Thank you for your contributions, Scotty.
Yes, it's on.
Yeah, well, listen, Scotty gave his opinion. I agree with most of what he said, but I still go back to I don't trust those Europeans that was involved in that march. They want to march, establish your own march, march against the police. Although I haven't seen, listen, I've been in this country the number of years I've been here on this earth. I ain't seen no coordinated march where white folks have got and marched against the police. I haven't seen it, have you? No, I haven't seen it. I have it saw it on the national level, on local levels, where a bunch of white folks got together and marched on the police. They don't do it. Now, I've seen black folks that have gotten tired and set up marches and marched against police, and then some whites jump in. But this is their system, full of white supremacy, white hegemony, however you want to say it. If anybody should have a voice against what their brethren are doing, it should be them. I ain't seen no march where they get out there on their own and march against the police. I ain't seen it. It's a black-white issue as far as I'm concerned. I ain't talking about the times that's on these forces that beat, shoot, and do to their own. Because you got a lot of Uncle Toms and they've been out, and Thomasinas that's been out here for a number of years. I ain't talking about them. That's a separate issue. Those ignoramuses are a separate issue and will eventually be dealt with. I ain't talking about them. All I'm talking about is these whites that join in with these black marches. They got plenty of opportunity to march on the police. All I see is them doing is coordinated efforts, thanking the police. Kiss a cop, or he's a hero, all this other stuff. They congratulate the police. Then all of a sudden, when it's convenient, they want to march about the police. That, to me, that's bullshit. But do you just set up your own marches? That's me. That's just me.
And I agree. You know, the thing that I agree with Scotty also that Malcolm's expressed that the idea or the part that I also agree with in sense of Malcolm's expression of nationalism and particularly black nationalism. You know, that being in this environment, in this political environment, this political economic environment, the only dubs to what you're saying, Elliot, because I think that as, you know, as what Malcolm was articulating is that if black people get justice as Americans, all Americans get justice, but black people have to be able to provide the template, the defense mechanism, the ability of self-governing, governance of itself to demonstrate what it needs to express its humanity within this here structural system that exists, that intentionally took away African people, black people's humanity. And every protest that black people do is to push this system, those who believe that, you know, even as a nationalistic thrust, that to push this system for its in its transformational aspect in order to look at what it is to be human. And only American, you know, only the longest population, but the earliest American is black folks, and we have been the ones defining what it is to be a citizen, what it is to be human, and we have been the ones that have been pushing this this American experiment. I heard Cornel West said this is a failed social experiment. You know. We have been the only ones today. So our experience and what we do, it is different. Our demands of what we see that a government should provide its citizenship is different because the privilege of whites, even moderate or liberal, and that term liberal, because liberal could mean conservative, and this time if you take it to its political origin, even they would be on this system would only really support them, so they can be anti to it. They can push for 40-hour work week and still push black people out of the union. They can get the benefits of fair housing legislation and deny black people of being able to have it. But what I take out of Malcolm, the ideology that he was pushing as far as what I would characterize black nationalism, that still has to be developed. And that's why, you know, you hear me lately, Elliot, praising Earl Henderson, who we had. And I would suggest people go who wants to look at Malcolm and look at to go back to Time for Awakening archives and listen to the discussion he had on his book, that the revolution will not be theorized. But the other thing that Scotty brought up, I thought that in this moment that I think is important, or at least struck my, is when he said about the prison labor and how Target is using prison labor and how those stores that are getting those cheap products, whether they be sneakers or anything else, from prison laborers. It struck to me, Elliot, that it's our responsibility to politically educate those young people in our community of the correlation between what this system has done with the free or cheap labor of prisoners, which the numbers show they young black people become. It's our responsibility, and how the corporate wealth that is created from it.
Yeah, and responsibility. And not only that, to show them how all of this works together. It's a system. Right. That prison labor wouldn't be there if they didn't figure that take third grade test scores, right, and figure that you'll be in those prisons. Talking about you, they ain't necessarily targeting no young whites to be in no prison. They're not. They're targeting our children. And whenever they do it in the street, selling dope or carrying on foolishness in the community, that's all going to funnel you towards their prison industrial complex, slavery. Right. All of it's right, working together.
That 1%.
And maybe through incidents like this, this is going to wake some young people up. Listen, I don't care that they done ran down there and bust up Center City. I don't give a damn. They can bust up several stores. Now, listen here. When Malik Zulu Shabazz was on here last week, and we've had other people on here talking about it, we need a concerted effort in these cities to stop our people from patronizing these stores. Mm-hmm. Well, some people ain't listening to that. So if they go down there and bust up the stores so they don't do business, then maybe that's what they're listening to. I don't know. Either way, it's going to accomplish something, because they're attacking these other businesses. They ain't our businesses that they're busting up. This is other people doing business in the community, whether they be white, Asian, or Arab, whoever. They're not investing any money in the community. They're taking money out. It's black elected officials that have allowed these people to come in and take control of the economy of these neighborhoods. They're as much of a fault as these other people. So I do agree with Scotty when he mentioned about blacks on these forces, and not only on the police forces, that condone a lot of this stuff. You got black elected officials that had to condone what's been going on in these neighborhoods and has been a part of it. But they're going to be up there on the podium telling young blacks to stop what they're doing. You messing up our city. Are you kidding me?
Or supposedly young black conservatives saying you're just acting like monkeys.
Well, James Baldwin said to be black and conscious in America is to be in a conscious state of rage. So I guess if you ain't mad, according to James Baldwin, I don't want to use that term that other racist that's running for president used. Put it this way. James Baldwin said to be black and conscious, you'll be in a constant state of rage. So if you're black and unconscious, you might not be mad. you might think everything is all right. But according to Baldwin, if you're black and conscious, you'll be in a constant state of rage.
And that we have, you know, the white community and what we classify as white. And it is, we didn't do that. America does that. I mean, right now, the 2020 census is in process. And in there, in order for it to distribute its future funds, it keeps the classification of white, black, and others in order to distribute the and we're told, or the way I operate, supposedly, even if it's not true, you know, the scarce resources. They need to have a demographics. So the whole construction of the maintenance, now at some point in the future, this political economic construct that America operates off of because of the origin of America and having these ethnic and then specifically these racial identities in order to determine what states get what money, you know, allocated to it. We just have to be clear that that's something that black folks didn't put in play. Right? So it's not, and therefore the strategic objective is different between what black folks want or even to what the transformational goal is. That's a dialogue between everybody in this society, but it's obviously different because our position is different in the construction, the system, as you say, Ellie, of this society. We can't overlook that. And that has political and organizing consequences because white folks in this have always been rebelling. It was working, quote unquote, working, snatched away white labor from the beginning that created these revolts that they have had from the 1600s to now. But when they accomplished their ends, that did not change the social structure of the majority of black folks. It just didn't. And it's not like we can't have mutual agreement, but we have to have honest understanding that our strategic objectives are different.
Let me go to a couple of these calls.
To what America's to be.
Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? And turn your radio down. Caller?
Oh, hi. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I'm calling from North Carolina. I wanted to.
What's your name, sister? And turn your radio down. Turn your volume down.
My volume? Hold on. Can you hear me now?
You got something up in the background.
Better? Huh?
Go ahead. What's your name, sister?
Oh, I'll just go by from North Carolina.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling because you said something about the who do we think are doing these the white people that are involved in this why do we think that they're involving themselves in the
Your speakers is up in the background, sister, so I'm hearing a double speak. I can't even get with your question because you got something up in your background.
I think
it's another radio or or something else that's on that can be heard.
Oh, that's giving an echo?
Yes.
Okay, hold
it's
on.
Not an echo, it's just it's coming through.
Okay, give me 1 second. Let me turn it down. I apologize for that.
Good. I don't hear it now. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. You know what it was? It was my television.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I wanted to respond to what you were saying in regards to that. And what they basically are, the white folks that have been involving themselves in the uprising as opposed to a riot, like they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
These are actually white agitators. And they have been identified as Antifa, undercover cops. Like provocateurs, just, you know, they, Antifa and the different organizations like you guys are stating, they have been outed. They have also been, crisis actors. They have been going, like, I guess getting, because you can tell that it's organized because they've been getting together and they've been going to different cities. I saw, I've been doing a lot of, you know, tweeting online, and they have identified, there was, initially in Minnesota, when the when they first jumped off with the whole you know, rioting started, they showed the guy that actually busted the window. He was a cop, and they identified him. They outed him. His girlfriend outed him on Twitter. They showed they were showing the, you know, the guy, and the girl said, "Oh my God, that's my boyfriend, and he has my mask on." So what they've been doing, they've been doing this, it's been intentional. Like, they've been going around and they've been instigating drama just so they can get, you know, I call it like Hegelian dialectic, a reaction, no, problem reaction, solution. They cause problems. We react the way they want us to react. They get the reaction that they wanted, that they planned. It's a planned reaction. And then what will happen is they're going to have a planned solution. They're going to have a solution, but it's going to only be for the benefit of white supremacy, uphold the system of white supremacy. So out of all of this that's going on, it's going to all be to the, it's going to still be for the benefit of white supremacy. It's really, I really don't believe that there's going to be any justice. There's not going to be anything different. I doubt it. I'm based on historical facts and things that have happened in the past. We can just go by what has happened already. Let's just look at the facts of things that have already happened. When we get killed, there's never a police that's indicted. If there is going to be somebody indicted this time, this will be a first. Okay. They already have this planned out. Also, what I wanted to say about that cop, how we know that it's a crisis act is that when he initially did the banging out of the windows, he was on another set. And he was doing something else, I think, banging out windows or water glass windows and things. And there was a guy that was pretending to be a police, a pizza guy. He had on a pink shirt. He looked like an Indian guy. But he had, I guess, had like his hair like tied up. And you know how they put the stocking on their hair so their hair won't hang long. So now he acted like he was coming out to get on the cop that was busting out his windows, but nobody knew that this was supposedly a cop, right? So then later on, another couple of recordings later, you see these two, and they're hanging out together. And then you see the same two. Now, this is the pizza guy that was supposed to be getting on the cop, undercover cop, that's been the antagonizer for busting out the glass windows. But then later on, they show video of them two standing together and they're hanging out together. And then on the third video, you see the guy with the pink shirt on and the guy, the police antagonizer, they're both knocking out glass windows. And then there were other white people that were throwing rocks and stuff at windows and stuff. They also show clips of white Antifa, and even white people have been outing them on Twitter, spray painting Black Lives Matter all over the place. And basically, to me, that's like a frame up. It's just like making it seem like we did this stuff, and you know that, but it's going to be blamed on us. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what, even though there's white people that's been involved, because at the end of the day, when this is all over with, you know, they'll be able to go back to their nice homes and they'll be able to continue to live in this, go back and live life as usual because they are white. They have, they are the dominant, society and, you know, everything will be okay for them, you know, but as you know, then we'll have to still live in those types of, conditions where, you know, we're being harassed. We're still going to have to deal with the police shootings. But then not only that, you know, most of our resources and the conditions that we live in are, you know, they're they're horrible and substandard anyway. I'm not saying in all cases, but in a lot of cases, you know, this, the conditions that some of our people live in, it's just, you know, it's not good anyway. So, I mean, then now we're adding, you know, this whole, you know, this uprising, this riot to the situation where they're tearing. We have these outside antagonizers that even there have even been some of our brothers and sisters that have been getting on the white people for tearing, throwing rocks and terrorizing and tearing things down. They have actually had to get on them and ask them to stop doing it because they didn't ask them to do that. And like the sister was saying on the video, she said, listen, we're going to have to still live here. You know what I mean? We didn't ask you to come in here and tear stuff up. You know what I mean? So it's like what they're doing is the instigation so they can get some stuff started. It's like they just want to, some of them even said, like, they just want to get it started because it's not like they're out there, all of them now. They're out there, they're fighting for our cause. Some of them even said the only reason why they're out there because they just felt like starting some stuff and they just wanted their voice to be heard. So we have to get over the fact that, yeah, like every time, you know, just because, you know, you see them out there with you, you have to look at them like Nellie Fuller, quoting Nellie Fuller, as white supremacist. Racist suspect. All of them are suspects. You know, I don't care. You know, if you, I mean, it's good to put the fact that they're out there with us because now we're able to see them on camera and them getting, some of them getting beat up and some of them being mistreated and seeing them acting like savages because, you know, they always want to pin it on us. But at the end of the day, it's still going to get turned around like it's all us. I'm telling you, they're going to go right back to where they live at and it's going to be okay. But then we're going to be the ones that still left in the conditions that we're living in, and as long as we have a system of white supremacy, it will always be about black and white. Don't ever forget that. If, as long as we have a system of white supremacy, because if it wasn't about black and white, we wouldn't need white supremacy. The operative word is white supremacy, meaning they are dominant over or supreme over all others. So as long as we have a system of white supremacy in place, it will always be about white supremacy and it will always be about black and white. You know, until we get rid of this system of white supremacy, then we can talk about, okay, like color doesn't make a difference in this and that and other, because if it didn't make a difference, and yet some white people do get killed, that's called collateral damage. Okay, that's what it's called. They will take out some of their own for the greater cause, which is white supremacy. So until we can eradicate this system, it's going to be about color because that's what they see. That's what they're about. That's what this is all about. And the black men that were, what do you guys, I wanted to pose a question. What do you guys think about the black men who were protecting the cops? They had a line of black men and they were protecting the cops.
What city was that in?
I wanted to ask that question.
I didn't see that. What city was that in?
I think it was in Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not really sure, but you can check it out, like, on Twitter. But that's what I basically wanted to say. But like I said, a lot of those people, they are outside instigators and agitators. And they're not there to do good. They're not there because they care about us. They're there to stir up some mess. And that's actual fact.
Thank you for your contribution, sister.
No problem.
Right.
Yes, thank you.
Let's go to Toronto, Canada. Toronto? Toronto, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Our guest tonight was scheduled to be organizer and president of the National Black Farmers Association, Dr. John Boyd. I don't know what happened. He didn't call in during the first hour, so we'll reschedule him for hopefully within the next 2 weeks. We'll get him back on for some of the listeners that might have been wanting to conversate with Dr. Boyd. We'll get him back on at a future date sometime very soon. And again, we're in open forum. We just transitioned in open forum. You can give us a call by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Take it easy, brother. Brother X on the line.
Oh, thank you, my good brother. Brother, I admire your knowledge and courage, and we might not always be on the same page, but we are definitely in the same book. Do you listen to an internet show come out of Philly called Time for Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard?
No, I haven't heard of that. It's good?
Time for Awakening, man. It's a great show. But anyway, in between they breaks, man, They play clips from many of our black leaders of the past, Malcolm X, and they play Rosa Parks. Anyway, Dr. King, they play these clips. And I would hope that maybe the station would think about doing that sometime instead of some of this music. They even got a clip of Fannie Lou Hamer when she was beat by two black guys in the jail. She was beat with phone books.
Yeah, yeah. I played that clip myself, trying to get people to come out to vote and see what people sacrifice.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. And a lot of our people haven't heard these people talk. And it would be good to hear that.
People keep waiting for something to come down from the sky. Your plans for New America is all laid out. I watch it outside the matrix, see it all.
play out. I make an observation. Then I have an obligation to tell the truth. Let it transcend generations. Release the frustration of these cameras that watch. Break time constraints of these Gregorian clocks. Face kids that's embedded by the media. It's smooth, right or wrong. It's like a genius. Been eating this for so damn long. We about to get it. Everybody ain't gonna listen. Even make the effort. You've been looking for a savior or a shepherd instead of heeding the message that the ancestors left us. After unlearning what you have learned from those concerned with preventing your evolution, the insatiable desire to know self will dissolve illusion after illusion, illuminating deception and darkening perception. Red pill ingestion, skill set perfection. Power begins at the level of conception, so we conceive of new relations, new villages and new nations. Dismissing traps and bridging gaps from conception to creation. In the absence of belief, there lies knowledge. Applied knowledge plus time equals wisdom. Forming new paradigms from old systems. Ancient values, future vision. Decode the message in this transmission and use it as your ammunition. Because whether or not you make it is strictly your decision. Should you choose to accept this as your mission?
People keep waiting for something to come down from the sky to bring their freedom, help them see themselves in a better light. But it don't work that way, my friend. Hoping for change is all pretend, when what we need is to transcend the path to freedom lies within. So ain't no sense in trying to fake it, cause everybody's not gonna make it. You want your freedom, you gotta take it. Everybody's not we need that red, that black, that green for liberation. Freedom's not free, freedom is taken.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:22 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in open forum. We transitioned into open forum because our guest was unable to be on the program this evening, Mr. Tom Burrell, organizer and president of the National Black Farmers Association. But again, for the listeners that didn't hear, we'll get him back on at a later date in the very near future. Before we go back to our calls, Richard, I just want to play the clip again for some of our listening audience that might have tuned in late that didn't hear it. This was Tamika Mowry speaking in Minnesota in reference to some of the demonstrations and what went on. I'll play it and then I'll go to the calls.
Is because this city, this state, would prefer preserving that white nationalism and that white supremacist mindset over arresting, charging, and helping to convict four officers who killed a black man. That is the reality of what we're dealing with. This is not just a few cops doing things across the country. This is not a good cop versus bad cop situation. This is Ahmaud Arbery being shot down by white men on the streets of Georgia. Breonna Taylor being killed in her home. This is in New York City where we were until freedom. We were just in New York fighting the police officers who in the name of social distancing were damn near killing black young people on our streets. This is a coordinated activity happening across this nation. And so we are in a state of emergency. Black people are dying in a state of emergency. We cannot look at this as an isolated incident. The reason why buildings are burning are not just for our brother George Floyd. They're burning down because people here in Minnesota are saying to people in New York, to people in California, to people in Memphis, to people all across this nation, enough is enough. Yes. And we are not responsible for the mental illness that has been inflicted upon our people by the American government, institutions, and those people who are in positions of power. I don't give a damn if they burn down Target. Because Target should be on the streets with us calling for the justice that our people deserve.
Talk about it, Tamika.
Where was AutoZone at the time when Philando Castile was shot in a car, which is what they actually represent? Where were they? So if you are not coming to the people's defense,
right,
then don't challenge us when young people and other people who are frustrated and instigated by the people you pay, you are paying instigators to be among our people out there throwing rocks, breaking windows, and burning down buildings.
Right.
And so young people are responding to that. They are enraged, and there's an easy way to stop it. Arrest the cops. Charge the cops. Charge all the cops, not just some of them, not just here in Minneapolis, charge them in every city across America where our people are being murdered. Charge them everywhere. That's the bottom line. Charge the cops. Do your job. Do what you say this country is supposed to be about, the land of the free for all. It has not been free for black people, and we are tired. Don't talk to us about looting. Y'all are the looters. America has looted black people. America looted the Native Americans when they first came here. So looting is what you do. We learned it from you. We learned violence from you. We learned violence from you. The violence was what we learned from you. So if you want us to do better, then damn it, you do better.
That was Tamika Mallory addressing the crowd in Minnesota. Let's go to our calls. Let's go to 267. 267.
Hey, good evening, Elliot, and good evening, Richard. Hey, man, just here during this pandemic, but you can never tell that we were under a virus pandemic while watching the news. People out there with no mask and out there enjoying that good weather. So I don't know, man. I'm just watching the madness. And Elliot, that clip you just played, you should hear Steven Jackson, the ex-Indiana Pacer player.
I was going to include it, but I didn't.
Very powerful statement. And now I see what, you know, when that brother used to play, we noticed that he had some anger in him. And when they had that fight with the Detroit Pistons, and he's seen some of those fans moving on Artest. You could tell he wanted some of that action up in them stands. And you could tell what was said to some of those brothers too, by the way they all grouped together and start whipping behind up in that Coliseum that day, in that arena. But just calling in, man. I don't know, you know, the only thing I say, I'm looking at the situation, and I see that it has grabbed the attention of our young folks. And I'm extremely, you know, where I see like some of the I'm not even going to call them Negroes anymore because, you know, that's what our ancestors were called, and which that word does mean black in different languages. So I'm not even going to call them Negroes. So there's no word for them. I'm just going to call them cannon fodder. They're beating up on the looters, trying to prove loyalty to master again. And you see exactly what it is. They might not even realize what it is. But, you know, if you go down some of the streets of North Philadelphia, I was in Houston. I couldn't believe this was in Houston. I don't care what city is in America, but you go in some of these urban areas, man, and you would think you have hit a third world country. And that, you know, those people, I mean, you know, it's almost like they've been forgotten or whatever. But you go through some of these neighborhoods and you see how some of our people are living. I go in different houses sometimes, and I am absolutely shocked. So when I see people out here robbing these stores, doing what they're doing, whatever, it's because they're under a press, you know. And just like their sister said, we learned it from you. You stole us. You stole us from our mainland. So I understand what the sister is saying, man. And I'm not really condoning what they're doing. But, man, when the opportunity presents itself, and it seems like our children are being set up or we're being set up because they are calling each other. Because I had a friend that was out there videotaping the whole thing. And what they're doing, they're saying the cops down here aren't doing nothing. So let's go on ahead and do it. It sounds like we're being set up, man. The cops have orders not to do anything. I heard they're up on 52nd and Parkside now. The Lowe's is just rampaged. Somebody had an axe, like, chopping into an ATM machine in the bank.
Wait a minute. What Lowe's? On 52nd Street?
52nd and Parkside, yes.
Yeah. Oh, they went in there. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is sad to say, but some of our sisters stole hair. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to beat up on the youth because these murders of unarmed black people been happening. I remember when it first caught my attention, like in the early 2000s, when there was an article in the Daily News that said like 38 unarmed black men had been shot in the city of Philadelphia. And you know, I'm talking about the early 2000s. I'm talking about 2001, 2002. That's when it started catching my attention. It actually peaked under everybody's favorite president, Barack Obama. You know, I mean, of course they want to say, like, you know, but this thing has never stopped. We were always being shot down, lynched, Emmett Till, you know what I mean? Tulsa, Oklahoma. I wish it could happen another way, but, you know, this country always believed that violence bring change. So they're only acting like what the country's culture is like. Violence brings change. You know, you have to make somebody very uncomfortable for change. And if looting these businesses, who has the mayor and the politician's ear, if looting these businesses, instead of burning down their own neighborhoods, because that is disturbing, but going to these business owners who have the mayor's ear, who can basically said, Mayor, you got to do something. Call off the Klan policemen that you have on your force so this won't happen again. I don't know what bill it was. Richard might know, but I know under George Bush, the last one, he had a bill that they pushed through that corporations had to, you know, they were now like seen as voters. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I forget what that bill was called, man. I was trying to look it up. Yeah. But these corporations have political influence. And for these corporations like Target and Walmart and all the rest of them to just sit back and watch black women. Now, I'm talking about black women being picked up and body slammed like some kind of trash bag by some steroid pumping punk. You know, they got a say in this thing too. These corporations got a say in this. So maybe somebody did their homework and say, not our own neighborhoods, maybe we attack those businesses because we know they have the politician's ear. We don't. They just tell us, like, they, matter of fact, our politicians are so they let us know we don't mean nothing. They want our vote, but they're telling us we ain't black these days. And you still, and you got some of us, some of these people, I don't want to call them out their name because I can't be hard on our people. You know, that's what one of the radio hosts, oh, leave our people alone. But I've seen some disturbing posts that they said Biden was right. I said, oh, man. So, you know, we got a long way to come. And like you said last, I think you said it Friday, Ellie. You said, we got to separate from these folks. Like me and you was discussing. Like, you know, even if you want to go on a scriptural base or whatever, when, you know, the people in the scriptures, they were told to separate from their enemies. But the thing about it, they had enough common sense to know who the real enemy was. They were talking about their enemy amongst ourselves. And once we realize who these enemies are that pollute the minds of our children, that keep us in status just so they can make a little loot, so they can get a position in the big house. These are the people, man, that really disturb me and really piss me off. And it just angers me when I see somebody, and, you know, you try to discuss these things with people, and they automatically, you must like Trump, or you must like, you know, something stupid and childish, you know, instead of really critically looking at it and say, we don't even have a friend in there. I remember when Barack Obama, and I'm going to say this, man, and if we, you know, Barack Obama got up there on the stage, and black people was telling him about the police brutality. Black people were telling him about the poverty in our neighborhoods. Black people was telling him about the discrimination going on. But he told your black leaders that you elected, stop whining. Stop crying. Kick off your bedroom slippers and put on your marching shoes. And just vote. These are the people that our people worship, show pictures of him saying he was scandal free and he was this when, please, all you got to do is Google this name, and I want your listeners to really listen to this name, Larry Sinclair Herring. All they got to do is hear that. That man ain't scandal free. They had that over his head before he even got in office. So anyway, I just wanted to call in and say, yeah, I'm looking at the situation. Our young people don't know no other way to deal with this thing except for what they're doing. It beats what we've been doing, singing We Shall Overcome and marching across the bridge to get our brains knocked off. So, you know, I mean, I'm just adding my 2 cents, man. You got to let our young people go. Let them go. Let them fend for themselves. I mean, what our generation teach them? We shall overcome. You know, I mean, we ain't teach them nothing. Well, matter of fact, we was teaching them that a firearm is something wrong to own. But I'm so happy that I got a call from a couple of my children saying they're ready to get a license for a firearm. So, you know, I have nothing against that because I'm like Malcolm X, and I love what Malcolm X said, and we still don't get it to this very day. He said, self-defense is not violence. Self-defense is intelligence. So, you know, until we start talking more about defending ourselves, because there has been a war on us since we've been born. Me and you discussed that plenty of times, LA, how we were chased home from school because we went in the neighborhoods of other people. And they couldn't stand our little black behinds, and they chased us home with hockey sticks and everything else. But yet they want to call us violent. And, I mean, I was a child, and I was shocked that grown men was chasing us home out their neighborhoods just because we wanted an education. So, you know, I just had to call in and say, like, leave the looters alone. They're, you know, go down some of these neighborhoods. See how some of these people are living. some of these people don't even know how they're going to eat the next day. So, you know, I mean, I just had to call in, man, and vent because we're so happy to jump on Master's side and say, look at the looters. I forgot all about George Floyd, the sister in Kentucky, her boyfriend who shot the perpetrators that was breaking in their house. You know, and they can make up any kind of lie. I always thought we had a lead that they sold drugs. Well, we don't know if that's true. And that man didn't know who these plainclothes people were coming in his house. You know what I mean? And if they thought they had drugs, what were they going to do? Take them and sell them again? So, you know, I mean, come on, man. You know, this thing is so unjust. And that sister was completely right. And Steven Jackson was completely right. And I got to admit, Jamie Foxx showed me something. Even though, you know, Jamie Foxx has his moments, but he's a Hollywood actor. He showed me something, man. The human side is coming out of all of us now because I think our eyes are open that this man wants to exterminate us. And I wish your brother, you just played him on a clip. Brother X would call in and give us the real education because I miss that brother calling. I hear him on another station, but I wish he would call in and educate the people because he was right. This is almost like extermination, man. And I don't think they're finished with it yet. This is just the start of it. So I got to go on ahead. I'll go back on mute and I'll listen to the rest of the station. But I had to call in since you were in open forum. And, you know, and if you notice now, they're only going to show the black looters. But and, you know, that's what the news crew is doing now. So you can lose sympathy for George Floyd. So they're only showing the black looters. But believe me, you know this thing is going on in King of Prussia and other areas. They just ain't showing those. They want to show the black folks because that's what this local mainstream news media does. So, man, I'm just going to go back on mute. And
thank you for your call, man.
Listen to the conversation. All right. Take care.
Hey, Ellie, before you go to the next caller, well, one, can I just, I guess, share a thought which seems expansive, but it goes to this point, you know, that is being presented in what we're looking at. But the Supreme Court ruling was about Citizens United, which was to provide that corporations can be able to provide campaign financing. And you know, I think, so that's, I wanted to, you know, bring that up. And the thing that, you know, now it's about, as we just have in discussion, we should, you know, be placing these actions, into the day after and the next generation. You know, it's that we have to look at that we were that young generation that was brought to this point of at one point in time that brought us to the point to provide the service or to be able to have the outlook that we're having now. And now what's being, you know, we're making these assessments and looking at systems that we have, which goes to the point about our strategic objective, you know, which I believe people are saying a different way, is about us governing ourselves, right? If we were governing ourselves, we would be policing ourselves, and those kind of psychopathic police officers wouldn't be within our community, whether because of community board, you know, review boards, or because we have cultivated by training, you know, having our sons and daughters having the skill sets and the commitment to want to provide the service, to be the protection for in our communities, utilizing the, you know, police system to as a means of career or occupation. And therefore they would have the empathy and the values that we recognize is needed in our community. So, you know, the thing that we can't lose sight as we're dealing with this discussion and looking at, you know, what, we saying the young people and the agitators are doing, that if we were governing ourselves, our aspirations is that we would be in a different position. You know, not if the government, you had mentioned earlier about what those politicians were saying and what those ministers were saying. They were saying our city, you know. But when we say governing ourselves, are we talking about governing the city or governing us as a people? And when we say that, are we saying that we have provided our young people with the type of political education and the ability to be able to be in the assembly, with the Malcolm X grassroots organization, you know, say about these people assemblies to where they can be able to formulate policy that would be in their best interest. And so that government funds for education, health, and other areas of human activity would be funneled into our areas, not that we'll be waiting for people to do that. Are we saying that when we talk about self-governing and coming up with those policies, are we saying that would be the difference compared to now? So when these moments come, we won't be reacting, or that generation won't be reacting. Are we saying that? I think that that's important. And my last point is, you know, in 2016, we call the system of white supremacy codified. And they said it before. They said they were preparing for 2050. I don't know if you heard that, Elliot, over and over again. They were looking at 2050, that things would be changed. They were even saying that by 2050, they would be the minority population, you know, right? That America would have a majority of minorities, you know, in America, which scares the hell out of them. But they also were saying that they're in transition, and one of their thinkers of that 1% people talk about, this is what we're dealing with when we see what the police are doing to us as they're in transition. When they're talking about locking down for 10 weeks, you know, over an invisible enemy, what they're doing in transition. When they're talking about that they're giving people $1,200, they put in the economy $6 trillion that they said they didn't have. Just 10 weeks before, they didn't have no money, but they were able to put in $6 trillion. This is what he said. Of the many diverse and fascinating challenges we face today, the most intense and important is how to understand the shape, the new technology revolution, which entails nothing less than transformation of humankind. This is them talking about what they're looking at. You know, we are at the beginning of a revolution that is fundamentally changing the way we live, work, and relate to one another in its scale, scope, and complexity. What I consider to be the fourth industrial revolution is like any other humankind has experienced before. This is what they're telling themselves, Elliot. So are we supposed to look at this as that they're looking out in our best interest? Are we supposed to look at these incidents that they are not, as Sister Mallory said, not coordinated activities? Aren't we using technology more to just, if we're staying inside? I mean, how many people are working at home? How many people, when you go in the supermarket now, you definitely are scanning food, the prices in yourself. So this, and how much of us being on the bottom with no wealth, another person interview for the Time for Awakening audience, you can go to when we had Dr. Darity on and speaking, or the brother did the black tax. How much wealth do we have? This is what young people who are out there, quote unquote, looting, this is what they're dealing with right now. We have no money. We have no jobs. We have no future. And they are in in their language, in a revolution. They're in a change. Should we assume that that change is going to incorporate us? That's I think the context of why more now we have to be definitely close to and developing those young people in relationship to the actions that they are taking is a political action, and it has consequences. But we want those consequences not to be reactionary consequences, to be deliberate, strategic, and visionary. But they cannot be that if we are not providing that. And that's what you always say about, you know, to have that information.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News. Newport News. Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to, let's jump over to Durham, North Carolina. 919, are you there? Durham? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 267. 267? 267. Some of these folks must have fell asleep on the phone there. Let's go to 215. 215.
215 is here.
Yes, sir.
Yes. I'm an elder. And
what's your name, brother?
This is Point. Yeah. I'm an elder.
And, no. I said, what's your name, brother?
Poindexter.
Okay.
Poindexter. Yeah. I'm an elder. And I participated in the riots 50 years ago. So there's information that should be shared now. You know, these things happen. It is natural. You've got politicians that are in position that sit down and negotiate, and they negotiate without a backing. They have an implied backing. You know, the black community. Well, the black community is speaking now. This is what's behind what they're negotiating. So now when they go back to the table, and when we go to the table now, it is important that we go to the table with this in our background, in our memory, that this is what happens when you don't negotiate fairly. Now, what should we be doing now? Having been involved 50 years ago, you can see the cycles. Right now, it's payoff time for all the charter schools we set up. I agree with Richard wholeheartedly, 100% of what he's talking about in reference to it's time to move our pieces up to say, give us what we've prepared for. All those charter school students, all these folks that have gotten a college education, that are underemployed now or unemployed now, they should be now taken on if a job is what they want. If a business is what they want, now's the time to put it together. Now is the time to get the payoff, because what you see in the street is what, this was our move if you don't do what we want. So it's not just violence, it's a display of frustration. It's just that people go after what's closest to them, whatever they can get their hands on. They may not go after the harder things, but the harder things is that we get more from the pot. So all these charter schools, all this preparation, yeah, we can prepare the primary school people, but right now, all those kids that can now go into biotechnology, all those kids that can now go into all this computer technology, it is time now for them to pull all those restrictions down and give us a chance to step in. Because right now, everything is kind of like very fuzzy. Folks should be on if they want a job, they should be on Indeed, putting up their talents so that all these places that feel like they want to do something, they can find you. Because we don't have the connections to get in to all the places that we should be in. And all that frustration on the street, this is what happens when you do what you do. But You know, in medicine, they have a thing called code blue. Code blue, when a code blue is called, everybody in the hospital runs to one location because what's happening is most important. They've got communicable diseases in the hospital, there's people being treated for cancer, all kinds of things going on in the hospital. But when code blue is called, everybody goes to that point and that place. And the hospital is always prepared for code blue. When they find, if they didn't do well on the last code blue, they prepare themselves for the next code blue. It's code blue for our community now. Time to open up, make spaces to let us move up into this society and get our rightful place. I have one observation to make, and I don't want to talk too long, but I've listened for the last month, and I know people are very long-winded, and I don't want to be like them. I noticed something that we have not seen, and that is the involvement of our brothers from the continent in this struggle. In Minnesota, if you're familiar with the demographics of Minnesota, you have a lot of our immigrant brothers from Liberia, and they have gotten involved big time in our struggle. And it's time for us to reach out to them and ally. Allies are the most important right now. We need all the allies we can get. And those brothers, being familiar with Liberia, Liberia's the only African country that if you get there, you're automatically a citizen if you're an African-American. So the Liberian brothers have chosen the American way, and they've been shocked and surprised that it's not here. What they came here for is not here. So they're in the streets in Minnesota. Let me also say this. In reference to the pandemic, or the, should I say, multi-epidemics, they went through Ebola. There's a lot to be learned from them. Take a look at Ghana. They've only got 34 deaths in Corona. 34. So something is happening that either we aren't aware of or that's not being reported.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to connect with our brothers. If you want to talk Pan-Africanism, now's the time for it to not talk about it and theorize. Do it. If you don't have three Liberian friends, you're underworking. And right now, as an elder, I say it's time for you to put in the work. And the work is prepare our young to move up and prepare ourselves to have allies. That's all I have to say.
Thank you for your call, brother. You know, it's kind of funny you mentioned that because I got an article in reference to what's going on the continent in reference to this coronavirus. And it's something like you just stated. Either we don't know about it or it's not being reported. I got something I want to read in reference to that, and I'll probably do it after the break. But thank you again for your call, brother. Let's go to 757. 757?
Yes, what's happening, Brother Richard, Brother Elliot?
How are you, sir?
Hey, good. I'm going to keep it short. The gentleman was a good intro to what I was going to say. The interesting thing about us, especially with this COVID, you know, you and I have had some terse exchanges, and you know, at advocacy, I do a little stuff behind the scenes. You've been doing your program for a long time. I invite a lot of people to your town. Now, a lot of people I work with, I'm just going to be frank about it. After they listen, the first thing they said to me is, I know why you listen to that. What do you mean by how do I listen? I don't agree with him. You see, that's what I think is the biggest flaw to getting what Brother Richard has talked about constantly, and you two too. I don't understand us not understanding as a people. The same ones that brag about we're not a monolith. I have just as much respect for you two brothers as I do for someone that is speaking what I think I believe. I don't discount what you say because I don't necessarily want to take the route you take. And here's an analogy I'm going to use because I'm country. It's the same thing my dad used to say to me growing up. You ever seen a pack of hyenas take down something? You know, we watching black and white TV. And I'm watching National Geographic. He said, yeah. He said, now, you don't think after they feast and lay them around and rest, if they don't get up, belly's full, and they don't have these little spats and arguments. But the problem, the thing is, they stay focused on what it is that's important in life. And I'm going to say this to you, tying it back into what you started with. People ask me all the time, do you believe in violence? What the hell do you mean, do I believe in violence? I look around me, it's violence everywhere. But you know what I do? I understand this. every living human being, first instinct is self-preservation. So I do believe in self-defense by any means necessary. So you don't need to go any further with me by do I believe in violence. I believe that violence is going on, and I can believe I might be a target of it. So self-preservation, that's the end of the conversation. You can't even drag me down the road of whether or not I want to commit violence. I don't have a record of violence. But I know damn well that the people that won't prepare to defend themselves have been victims. So we don't have that. So I'm going to say to you, I see this COVID thing as a possible way, just like you had one of my favorite people on Dr. Darity talking about reparations. And we tried to make the point that whether you're Pan-Africanist and you want to go to the continent or make bonds and get up and go, that's cool. But you know what? Our people, basically, and everybody said that, are the basis and the currency for how this country got built. So I ain't never going to a job, have a problem with somebody that owed me a check, and I leave without that check. Pay me, let me go. So my thing is, we as a people have to stop trying to make enemies of ourselves. And I bring it back to some of the young people, you know, I work with. I had one of my colleagues call in, you know, she went off on you last week, you know. But I don't demonize her for that because I'm 66. She's in her early 30s. So I can't tell her how to vent her anger and frustration. What I can say to you is we're all under that, and we need to start having respect for each other. Everybody talk about loving or not. We need to start with respect. I can sit and talk with you and Brother Richard and listen to something being presented that I may not like the way it's being said, but I can find the truth in it, and we all grow. I'm going to leave it there. That's what we need to do. If COVID-19 ain't taught us that, we ain't never going to learn. And the only way we're going to get to sovereignty is get paid for what we need. And I'm not talking about just money. If you read Darity's book, I'm sure you went through it because you interviewed him. There's sections on what we need. We need control over real estate people that are suppressing our values. We need access to money. We can only do that if we come together and have respect for us. I ain't got no problem with a brother from NOIA or Pan-Africanist or nothing. I'm telling you, we all get to the table, we get served. If you're going to go back to your square, we meet again when the business is supposed to be done. I ain't trying to dictate to you how to live your life. I'm saying we need to come together and get the job done. I think we can do it because this COVID going to last a little longer than people think. All this mess is going on now. If we see a second wave, you're going to really find out what this country is all about, and we need to get together and get the job done. Much love to you, brothers.
Thank you, sir, for your contribution. You know, Richard, he's right. A think tank, we've been always talking about that, a think tank is needed. We're not going to all have the same ideas. But if we got ideas for our people to move forward, then they need to be espoused and exchanged. And we have sense enough to agree on the best ways to move forward. Even if you try a way for a year, 6 months, trial period, and see the results of it, assess the pluses and minuses, and then move forward from there. It's no more this take my ball and go home type of thing. We can't afford that anymore. And, you know, something that he mentioned too, that Brother Otis just mentioned and the caller before just mentioned, I want to read this article and share it with our listening audience. It's in reference to what the caller Poindexter had mentioned. And it's another thing for us to consider. When I was mentioning about considering these other nationalities starting trouble and marching with some of our young people and what's their objective, let's look at this article here before we go to a break, and then I got these other callers that we'll get to right after the break. This is a published report here by a gentleman from the continent. It says, why are Africa's coronavirus successes being overlooked? That's the question in the header to the article. It says, remember early on in COVID-19 pandemic, the speculation as to how apocalyptic it would be if the disease hit the African continent. I remember it. There was definite and deep anxiety about what would it mean for countries with lower income populations, dominant but harder to regulate informal economies, and far fewer healthcare facilities than of the UK or Italy. There has been coronavirus mistakes and misjudgments and deaths, and each one is a tragedy. No one knows the course the pandemic may take next. The continent, like the rest of the world, isn't out of the woods yet. But what has also... Hold on one second. Sorry. But what has also happened is that many African nations, realizing early on that large-scale, expensive testing and hospitalization was not an option for the population, had no choice but to take more creative approaches. Take the two African countries I have called home, Senegal and Ghana. Senegal is developing a COVID-19 testing kit that would cost $1 per patient. It is hoped and will, in less than 10 minutes, detect both current or previous infections via antigens in saliva or antibodies. It's hard to know exactly how this compares with the price of Britain's tests, but many of them use polymeron chain reaction or CPR to detect the virus, and it costs hundreds of dollars. I can testify that the leaflet that came through my door in London this week offered me a private testing kit for $250. I don't know what this is in British money. But let me skip down and continue on the article. Senegal is a good position because its COVID-19 response planning began in earnest in January. As soon as the first international alert on the virus went out, the government closed the borders, initiated a comprehensive plan of contact tracing, and because of the nation and multitude of occupations, offered a bed for every single coronavirus patient in either a hospital or a community health facility. As a result, the nation of 16 million people had only 30 deaths. Each death has been acknowledged individually by the government and condolences paid to the family. You can afford to see each death as a person when the numbers are at this level. At every one of those stages, the UK did the opposite, and now facing a death toll of more than 35,000. Ghana, with a population of 30 million, has a similar death toll to Senegal. Partly because of extensive system of contact tracing, utilizing a large number of community health workers and volunteers, and other innovative techniques such as pool testing, in which multiple blood samples are tested and then followed up as individual tests only is followed up as individual tests only if a positive result is found. The advantage to this approach is now being studied by the World Health Organization. Across the African continent, the lack of access to expensive pharmaceutical products, not to mention its well-founded historical lack of trust, have fueled interest in whether traditional herbal remedies have anything to offer. One plant in particular, Artemisia annua, or sweet wormwood, which belongs to the daisy family, is drawing particular attention after the president of Madagascar claimed it was a cure for COVID-19. That may sound triumphant, and the WHO, the World Health Organization, have cautioned that further trials are needed before it can advocate it as a treatment for the disease. But I contacted the respected Institute of Colitz and Interfaces in Germany, which is currently conducting clinical trials on a different breed of the same plant. This specific plant is more potent in variety than sweet wormwood and is being tested on cells to determine its effectiveness in fighting corona infections.
Excuse me.
Hold on a second, I lost my place. Professor Peter Seabreeze told me it's very interesting, and human clinical trials are likely to follow. The reason you probably haven't heard about this, he says, is because of the attitudes towards African innovation. If it was a European country, that was actually discovered this remedy, there wouldn't be so much doubt. The scientists have stated, and we'll have to say whether his cure actually works among those calling for better evidence or the safety and effectiveness of the Madagascar trials. But on Eurocentric attitudes, he has a point. The African continent has a stellar history of innovation and a way out of problems. Just look at how mobile money and phonetics have turned into those more digital savvy regions in the world. It has been well documented how a patronizing attitude towards Asia has allowed European countries to be caught by such surprise in the spread of this disease. Now, a similar mindset is set to ensue if we don't learn lessons from the African continent and what it has to offer the world. So Richard kind of goes along with the caller, Poindexter, to talk about the successes that has happened on the continent that we know nothing about. We're sitting here waiting for Europeans to come up with a cure when some of our people haven't been affected as devastatingly as the numbers have in this country. I had another article in reference to Cuba's successes in reference to this disease. I'll save that article. But that's good, too, that the caller brought that up, because I did have this article to share. Two countries that this brother had done documentation on. Senegal, with a population of 16 million, had only 30 deaths. And Ghana, which has a population of 30 million, had the same death toll, 30 people.
And the plant is natural to the country, and it was something about that I thought when I seen about Senegal, where they were using 3D manufacturing to create those a respirator, because so here even the manufacturing capacity of using technology to deal with something. But this goes into the West and America. And when you're talking about this here 1%, or as that was presented before, are these corporations, the reason why they don't want to look anywhere else, because they want to make a product that they can sell and impose, push. Well, on everybody else.
Exactly.
They ain't going to look to where African country.
Yeah, I know they won't, but I'm talking about what we should be doing. And it goes to what you were saying about a public health policy. Right. If we see that the mother continent have come up with some solutions to the spread of this disease and the control of this disease, should we be looking towards something else? I don't necessarily be looking for Europeans to do anything for us. Because, we're going to get the short end of the stick when it comes to them.
Right.
We're going to take a break. Go ahead.
Right. And the only thing is that what Brother Otis, that in the question of difference, and also Brother Poindexter, we have to be willing to negotiate our difference towards a solution that will benefit us. Negotiation is important. Yeah, it's important to have different beliefs and values and ideals. But when we know that we're dealing with the same goal, it's not going to be you do it my way, or as you say, I'm going to take my marbles and run. That's counterproductive. So it has to be a negotiated deal with internally before we can negotiate deals externally.
We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we got callers on hold. And you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for An Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard.
on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI, the only word you need to know to join your global Commits You Black family, to join your interconnected Commits You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughingstock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We're just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:21 here in the city of Philadelphia. And we're in open forum the rest of the way. Our guest that was scheduled for this evening, organizer and president of the National Black Farmers Association, Dr. John Boyd, was unable to be with us. But we're going to schedule him for the show in the upcoming weeks, and he'll be on Time for an Awakening. Let's go to the phones, Richard. Let's go to 773.
You got me, brother.
Oh, boy, Richard, maybe these insurrections is on time here. What's going on? How you doing?
A couple of people, man, they touched me on the shoulder, told me to come out of that rabbit hole and call you good brothers. Now, you all been using my intellectual property.
Well,
y'all owe me big time.
I
owe my paper.
You got to see Richard about that.
I'm by golly. Man, I got more to say than Donald Hitler Mussolini dump at a Klan's rally. Hey, brother, don't play that Sister Tamika Mowry clip no more, man. She scared me.
She scared you?
That's too much truth. Man, that girl, ooh, that sister bad. Black people, wait a minute. Let me do this first. Anybody that do not want to hear about genocide of human beings that's been going on for over 3,000 years by Caucasians, anybody that do not want to hear about extermination of human beings that's been committed by Caucasians for over 3,000 years. Now, anybody don't want to hear that, don't listen to me. It was said many, many moons ago, the process of understanding or perceiving a coming evil has put many people into a situation of the utmost danger. What that simply means, my good people, the vast majority of humans that were exterminated in the past, they never saw extermination coming. They saw bad things being done to them. They saw themselves being treated fairly or unfairly and hunted down, but they had no idea that the people that came to their land and that was doing this to them had plans to exterminate. Now, this is where we are as an enslaved people in these wildernesses of North America. They did not bring us here to be no damn citizen. They did not bring us here to be treated fairly. They brought us here to work, brutalize us, rape, lynch us, do anything they wanted to do us. And now they are finished with us. Except for a lot of our young boys and girls, they are not finished with them. They're going to keep a lot of them for their pleasure, like Thomas Jefferson them did and all them boys. They are not finished with them. Now, people, if you believe what I just said, if you think you're going to defeat this psychopath, and I'm not knocking nobody want to fight the psychopath, go right ahead. If you think you're going to defeat this, the greatest killer ever walked the planet in his wheelhouse, and he the dominant culture, dominant population, control government, police, state, outer space, space shuttle, satellite. If you think you're going to defeat him, then you just stay right here and just wait. Now, if you think you cannot or will not and we cannot defeat the greatest killer in his wheelhouse, if you think you cannot defeat him, then you might want to think about getting your hat, getting some young granddaughter out of here, some young child, some young granddaughter, grandson, before these psychopaths get their hand on them. Right now, we ain't crazy. That's why we listen to shows like this. We are being set up. But we can't help but being set up because this is their empire. They run it. They are putting images all over the world of what they're doing to us. The lynching, they took pictures. They took their children to the lynching. They played music. They ate food. They cut off the black man's genitals, took them home, put them in a jar. These are a sick, demented people. Many of us are trying to handle and deal with them like they are good, decent human beings. They are not. This is their empire. They run it, and they run the world. And outer space. Anybody don't agree with that? That's fine. You have black people say, hey, man, I'm going to Africa, man. I'm getting out of here. Sure. You might go to Africa and live your life out and have this and that. But the white man run Africa. That's why when Gaddafi wanted to go in Africa and do this and that for Africa, he said, oh, no, not you, Gaddafi. The British can go in Africa. The French can go in Africa, the Belgium, Spain, Greece. Anybody could go in Africa and do business here. Who? Gaddafi and the Negro. Now you got that Uncle Tom, Barack O. Bush, the murder Gaddafi, running around in Africa now, talking about doing a basketball league, making commencement addresses for the graduates. A war criminal. Think about that, people. It's a war criminal. And we acting like, black people acting like this guy is just somebody good. then Barack Bush and George Bushwhacker, another war criminal, they go down to the Edna Pettus Bridge in Alabama to commemorate the Civil Rights March. And Negroes piled up behind them, talking about we should overcome. We done lost it. Look at it. We done lost it. So you're going to have to come up with a decision. What's best for you? Now, check this out. We're in a serious situation here. Dylann Roof assassinated 9 people in a church in South Kakalaka. That young boy, Dylann Roof, he didn't know them people be at that church in a state senator come down Wednesday for a prayer meeting. Oh, young white boy, Dylann Roof, don't know that. So we know some older Klansmen sent Dylann Roof to that church to do what he did. Now, follow this. Dylann Roof left one old woman alive, and he asked her. He said, you know why I left you alive? She said, no. He said, I left you alive because I want you to tell them what I did here. Think about that, people. Follow me. Dylann Roof left her alive to go tell what he did there to let us know the terror he did. Dylann Roof left that church. He's in a white supremacist country, white supremacist sending, South Carolina white supremacy. How you think Dylann Roof got caught? He wanna be caught. Dylann Roof is what you call a martyr. He's like the suicide bomber. He's praising himself. The other young white supremacists look up to him. Psychopath. Came up when the police had Laquan McDonald. Laquan McDonald was set up. You're not going to hear this on white supremacist media. They picked him up, dropped him on the area that he don't normally be in. That's why he was acting crazy on the tape. He was telling the police, walking away from, what y'all gonna do? Hey, man, y'all gonna bomb me? What y'all gonna do? Van Dyke, the psychopath, supposed to be policeman. He gets out of his car, go over there. People, listen to me. Shot him 16 times. Sparks jumping up off the sidewalk. Psychopath, law system. Hey, that psychopath Van Dyke shot this boy 16 times, gave him 6 years. Supposed to be having him locked up in Connecticut. We don't even know where he at. Don't even know he locked up. Rodney King. I always been a political guy because I grew up in Birmingham, marched with Dr. King. I ran down to 16th Street to church, 16th Street Baptist Church. It was in the neighborhood. People ran up to me, oh, man, you see that Rodney King video? I said, no, I ain't seen it. Oh, man, we got him this time. I said, oh, yeah, okay. The man is on tape. I said, yeah, okay. Look, people, did you think about when it's so convenient for these psychopaths to commit this terror on Rodney King and for it to be taped? What happened after the Rodney King tape? People telling me, oh, things finna change now. Oh, man, they gonna get them. What happened? Police terror increased. Images are powerful. The psychopath just assassinated this brother up in Minnesota. He knows somebody is feeling that. He wanted to be shown. They are desensitizing the world for what's been to happen here to millions of black people. When you keep seeing somebody shot in the head every day, they throat cut. If you keep seeing that every day, pretty soon it don't bother you. The boy that was jogging in Georgia, again, a setup. Again, tape, on tape, Tamir Rice, on tape, boy walking back in Oklahoma with his hand up to his car, shot in the back, three times on tape. The world is seeing this. They are telling the world that we are not human, that we have no right to live. There is no leadership dealing with this, these psychopaths. If you think there's leadership dealing with it, fine. Hell, you're going to have a UN headquarters in New York. People being assassinated on camera. Brutalized, terrorized, women, children. UN set up there quiet. What kind of mess is that? Talking about some damn black caucus. Don't even go up there. What is that? Ass shopping in New York. He right there at the UN. What is, where he going? What is that to go talk about? I know the man run the UN. There's no accident the UN is in New York. Rockefeller built it and brought him there. Why? He put him there because he knew what he was doing in the world to people. He knew he was terrorizing people across the planet. So what better place than to have the UN for human rights and the den of the psychopath who terrorizing people across the world? Now look at the UN sit up there, quiet as a church mouse. Damn Pope come here parading all around, visiting people, quiet as a church mouse. We being assassinated on camera. Think about that, people. Now, if you believe what I said, and do you still think you're going to defeat these psychopaths? They have, I heard, man, it might be more than that. These psychopaths got over 3 million assault weapons in white boys' hands across this country. Is black people ready for that? And think about this, my good black people. Y'all are so beautiful. Every black town, they burned down and killed people. What the black people did? They fought and shot. What happened eventually? They had to get their hat. You can't stay there. This is not your country. You're not the dominant of people. Every one of them black towns, they had to run for their life. It's not going to be any different this time. I don't care what weapon you got, the bullets. That guy at home, he got a wife and 3 little children. Is he ready to run to the woods? Is he ready to fight Billy Bob? Hey, what are you going to do when you run out of ammo? Go run down to Walmart? And remember this, black people, when it starts. If they can find you, they can kill you. Ronald Reagan tried to kill Gaddafi, bombed his house. Gaddafi just happened not to be there. Killed one of his sons. Barack Obama come back later on, go back and make sure the job is done. I'm not telling nobody what to do, but what I want you to do is think about who we're dealing with. Think about how sick they are. These people are psychopaths. You in Philadelphia, over 300 police, retired and on duty. Make a damn a video or something. Spewing racism. What did that mean? Oh, don't do that. Why would you do that? What do that mean? That means this is their empire. This means that they run it. It is so sad for me to see these so-called black people running around here looting and all. I understand their frustration. The white man don't care nothing about no looting. That's like a goddamn foam cup to him. It means nothing. What he cares about, the atmosphere that's being created. An atmosphere that's being created where the black people are the bad people. Look at them, acting crazy. Bad person ain't Dylan Roof. It ain't the boy that shot Laquan 16 times. Hey, man, it's them Negroes over there. Look at them. Hey, out there looting. Man, somebody need to do something to them. That's the atmosphere that's being created.
Well,
and we have no leadership to address that and let them know that this is what's happening. And they reporting here. They even got white boys down there spewing this stuff on, leading it, the main ones, again, creating an atmosphere for us to be slaughtered.
Thank you for your contribution, brother.
I want to thank you, brother. I want to thank you for taking my call. And I'm going to be looking for my check in the mail. Y'all using my intellectual property.
Peace. Talk to
all
you.
All right, thanks, brother.
Take care.
You know, before we go to the next caller, Richard, well, he put forth a, when I asked the audience, what do they think about why these people are involved when a lot of them is on these forces? But then you got, it's already been leaked out that some of these people are involved and spearhead some of this violence that has been started. And why? Well, Rolex gave his explanation why. He said that they want to start a war. That's similar to what, brother, the May Race War. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Black. Similar to what he was saying in a documentary. So question is still out there. Why, you know, what are their plans? What are they doing? They always try to have plans when they're dealing with us. They don't never just jump out there and do something where they haven't thought about it.
And I definitely like that. Our atmosphere is being created.
Yeah, I don't have no problem with that assessment. Let's go to 215. 215.
Brother Elliot, how you doing, Brother Elliot?
Good, son.
How you doing, Brother Richard?
Right
now. Praise be to Allah. You know, Brother X is so hurt. I know you're still listening, but I love you, Brother X. I'm so glad he called. He made my night, Brother Elliot. I mean, I'm glad all the brothers and sisters that called in tonight, but Brother X made my call, man, because I've been wanting him to, you know, call back. I've been praying it from the call because he's been, you know, calling to restorate. I knew it was a matter of time before my dear brother, Brother X, would call. Brother X, Brother Joe, love you here in Philly, bro. I'm glad you called, man. You gave some eye-opening, some eyebrow-raising information, brother, that you said tonight, man. And I hope, Brother X, that you continue to call more and more as we move on and everything. It was good hearing from you tonight, Brother X. You know, Brother Elliot, when Brother Ralph had called earlier, Brother Ralph was making, and I'm sure Brother Ralph, when he was in Houston, I'm assuming, Elliot, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm guess, or Ralph can let you know for sure, when he said he was in Houston recently, right? And he said, remind him of like a third world country. Is that correct, Elliot? And it's ironic, Brother Ralph would say that because I was in Houston myself. Now, I'm assuming Brother Ralph was there recently, so I can imagine it's probably a lot worse now. I was there with my friend Kevin, who used to live in Upper Darby. He lives in Tampa, Florida now, and he said he was protesting down in Tampa yesterday. And Kevin was telling me, he was saying he was protesting in Tampa yesterday, but me and Kevin was down in Houston back in 2005 because we was on our way to Dallas, Texas, to see the Eagles play the Cowboys. And we had a long layover in Texas. Our plane was delayed in Houston for about 5-6 hours, so we had some time to kill. So me and Kevin, we decided to go to the hood in Houston. So we went to the black neighborhood in Houston. And just like Brother Ralph said, Elliot and Richard, and for the Times and Wigan listening audience, when we walked around Houston, man, if you would have told me, Brother Elliot, that I was in parts of North Philly or West Philadelphia, you're seeing the same hopeless and despair that you see in many of our communities where our people just look hopeless, like they don't have a future. You saw that just the sense of despair. You could have told me I was in North Philly and I would have believed it, and even though I was hundreds of miles away in Houston. And I had the same feeling years previous, the Elliot and Richard, when I was in Indianapolis, Indiana. Same way. I was in the black community in Indianapolis, Indiana. Same way. I walked with this brother named George Dawson, who I befriended down there and stuff. I met him and his wife down there because we was down there for a Mike Tyson rally and stuff. And same with them when I was down in Indianapolis, Ellie Richard. Same thing. I saw another hopeless and despair. And I was down in Indianapolis. That was back in like 19... Oh, God, when was that? I know it was like the mid-90s and stuff. Yeah, they did like around 93, 90, whatever it was, 92, 93. Same thing, that despair and stuff with our people. And I'm saying to myself, this can't be no accident. No matter where you're at in the United States, you could be in Dallas, Texas, Houston, Texas, Indianapolis, Indiana, Minneapolis, Minnesota, where our people are at, and for the most measure in these black communities, it's a sense of hopeless and despair, and that's not our people being a hopeless or helpless people. It's because of racist white society. Got our people in subpar schools, and that's the same thing what I saw in Houston, Ellen and Richard, subpar schools. It's like you see up in Philadelphia. You know what I mean? So I'm saying to myself, this is no accident here, bro. This is a direct attempt to continually keep our people at the bottom of the ladder, the socioeconomic ladder. I mean, that's crystal clear. It's so clear, Ellen Richard, that a blind man can see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so clear, man. But you know, I don't know if you and Richard have heard. Oh, by the way, I want to thank you and Brother Richard for playing Tamika Mallory. I love that sister. You know, she was under attack from the Zionists for her strong defense of Minister Louis Farrakhan, because she has been seen with Minister Farrakhan at Savior's Day over the last few years, and she has been attacked by the Zionists, even some of these so-called white women livers that claim they for women, and these are the same white women, by the way, that didn't say a damn thing about Sandra Bland getting killed, or our sister in Louisville, Kentucky, Breonna Taylor, so they attacked her and my Muslim sister, Linda Sanshaw, the Palestinians, so they attacked both of them for being at Savior's Day with the minister the last couple of years. Them sisters stood strong. They let them Caucasians know you mind your damn business. You don't tell us who we can support and who we could be grown damn women. You don't tell us who we can support and who we could be with. You know, some that's why I had number love and respect for Tamika Mallory. But Jay's buddy Perm Daddy, you know, he was Tamika Mallory's supposed to be like a mentor for her. You know, when they attacked her, Perm Daddy was silent. His silence was so conspicuous. You know what I mean? And I'm saying to myself, the minister came out and defended her, and she just recently defended the minister over the last few years. But she been knowing Al Sharpton for years, but he was silent when the Zionists attacked Tamika. Al didn't say nothing. You know what I mean? It's just these Negroes. I'm telling you, man, just there's the spinelessness and cowardness of them when it comes to these Zionists. Man, it boggles the mind. It just boggles the mind. But anyway, a couple of things, and I'm off. Did you and Brother Richard hear about his airness said that we have had enough? Did y'all hear that comment?
Who are you talking about?
His airness. I'm going to just make it short. Number 23 of the Chicago Bulls.
We've had enough. What are you talking about?
Michael Jordan released a statement today. It was all over CNN earlier. He said, we have had enough. Talking about the killing of George Floyd.
What
I
we?
Said, wow, him? I said, now I want to see what kind of follow-up he has with that statement. Anybody can make a statement, but I want to see what Jordan says after that. You know what I mean? Because, see, Jordan did this double speak before when they had the killing of the brother Stephen Clark in California the other year. Remember, Jordan gave money to the black community or something. Then he also gave $1 million to the police union. Remember, Elliot? So, yeah. so this double speak out of Michael Jordan, I trust him as far as I can throw. So I want to see what his follow-up when he said we have had enough. I'm assuming he has said we as black people have had enough. I'm assuming. Again, I'm not, you know, with him, you just don't know. But I just thought I'll make that aware to you and Richard, because I don't know if y'all had heard the statement that Jordan had made. You know?
No, I think that personally, you know, I might be wrong, that his white handlers and all them people that kind of do his public relations told him that he should say something. And told him basically what he should say. Normally, he has his mouth closed. He don't want to ruffle no feathers. He don't say anything.
That's true. Oh, yeah, you, your thing is right on point, because the brother do the sports on terrestrial radio here in Philadelphia, he said, I'm a Jordan fan, but he said, this man has made it very clear. He is out of his own mouth. He said, I don't get involved with racial and social issues.
I'm yeah, so you know, clear. So for him to say that, I don't, you know, come on, you show me. I'm from Missouri. You got
to
show me.
Missouri, the show me state. And that's the way I feel too, Brother L.A. He got to show me. He got to back up that with some actions and stuff besides just making a statement. So I want to see what he does with this as well.
You know, but let me say this, Joe.
I'm good, L.A. I'm sorry.
And I talked about this before about how Europeans kind of look at black people like they're somewhat less than intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And some blacks might see that as an offense, but that's true. That's how they deal with you, that you're somewhat less than. Now look at what's going on in this NFL. You got all these quarterbacks, all of a sudden, even subpar quarterbacks like David Carr, like the guy here in Philadelphia, what's his name? Carson Wentz. All these mm-hmm. subpar guys, and even their shining prince, this guy that left Boston and went down to Miami.
Tom Brady.
Brady. All of them mm-hmm. made statements. Oh, this is George Floyd. Oh, this is so terrible. We can't have this. Now, why is all these quarterbacks all of a sudden, and even this rookie that just got into he ain't threw a pass yet.
Joe Burrow, yeah.
He's making statements.
The number one pick. The number
now,
one
you
pick,
don't, you don't think all this is orchestrated?
Of course. He said we got to support the black community.
But see, well, that fascinates some black folks. Like, wow, they don't understand. Come on. Some of our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge and perception of who they're dealing with.
Exactly. They don't think, Stanley, you and me and Richard and Brother X and us, we think, Brother Ralph, we think critically. They don't think critically like that, man. As long as a white person throw them a flood, and that's why, like I did, that's why I read the sister from North Carolina. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I respect the human beings, or I respect human life, but I've never closed my eyes to the fact that we're going to always deal with, it's always, when you deal with white folks, it's always going to be a black and white situation, you know what I mean? And like I said, for the few white boys that get killed by the police, hey, it pales in comparison to how they kill us. And you can be damn sure one thing, and that black cop started up in Minneapolis, the same city where Brother George Floyd was assassinated, and where Brother Philando Castile was killed. When that brother from Ethiopia shot that white girl the other year, his ass is in jail serving 12 to 25 years. So when they do shoot somebody white, they gonna pay for it. So those white cops that killed those white guys in North Carolina, wherever they kill them at, if it's not beyond a reasonable doubt, if it's not justified, those white cops, they gonna go to jail. When they kill white folks, they gonna go to jail. If it's not beyond the reason, if you prove my point, right here in Philadelphia, when that white cop shot that white boy up here in Frankfurt a few years ago, the white cop was all drunk, and he had a habit of pulling his gun, shooting dogs, stray dogs and cats. He was a loose cannon. But it finally culminated, Ellen Richard, where he got into a confrontation because his son got into an argument.
Yeah, I remember
with
that.
White boy, from the LA, mm-hmm. And he shot the white boy. Well, that white cop is in jail now. He got like 30-something years in jail. He shot a white boy. His ass is in jail. Now, you know, if he would have shot a black boy, he would have been pretty much acquitted, off-duty or not, and he would happen to be off-duty at the time, but his ass still in jail, though. You know, so this notion that there's some equality there, again, it's, to me, it's always, people can think what they want. Everybody got a right to their opinion. But as far as I'm concerned, it's always black and white in this America that we live in, brother. America, and I say America with three Ks, and I don't say it with A-L-A-M-E-R-I-C-A. I spell it A-M-E-R-I-K-K-A. And make no mistake about it, brother. It's what you, matter of fact, and it's funny, I just said Klan. They show in New York City right now where you got people got signs saying stop the Blue Ku Klux Klan. Talking about the police, it's saying stop the Blue Ku Klux Klan. As I was saying that just now, it was so ironic how the timing just came in just now. But yeah, I mean, this thing, like I said, we got to watch these white players, because like you said, they all of a sudden now they so interested in black life. Because like I said, Tom Brady, and I close with your last couple of comments, so your other calls we get on, Elliot. Mm-hmm. Up in Boston, Tom Brady played so many, but 12, 14, whatever years he played up in the New England area, the Boston area. He know about black men in Boston being killed by the police. He ain't never opened up his damn mouth. Same with his former owner, Robert Kraft. He didn't care about black men being killed by the police or black men going to jail. Now he was so concerned. Now, we're supposed to believe that he's concerned about Meek Mills getting a raw deal from the judicial system. Now, I'm saying to myself, if Robert Kraft, billionaire white Jewish owner, if he was so concerned about injustice with black people, why the hell he didn't make no public stance all those years in Boston? You know what I'm saying, Elliot?
Yeah.
These people, they play for stupid, man. And some of us, like you said, we go for the okie doke and stuff, man. We go for the nonsense. These people don't give a damn about black people and stuff, man. They play. And again, I never said you didn't have some well-meaning white folks that don't care. It's not my job to look, seek them out. Like I take the position that I honorable Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm, and people like that. If white people are really sincere about seeing difference, go out there and fight against your racist white father, your racist white uncle, your racist white uncle or dad on the police department. Fight against them and stuff. Try to keep them in check. If you do that, then you show me something. But don't tell me that you think what happened to George Floyd is a shame. And I don't want to hear all that this stuff. Go out there and put action behind your words. I'm like you. I'm from the Show Me State. You show me what you can do. Don't tell me. Show me. You can. The old saying goes, you can show me better than you can tell me. And that's the bottom line, bro. But thanks, Brother Ellen Richard. And again, once again, thanks, Brother Lex, for calling, man. And I'll sit back, Ellen. Put me on mute, and I'll listen to the rest of the show, bro.
Talk to you.
You're welcome.
Let's go to our last caller for the evening, Richard. 646.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Richard and Elliot, man? It was an absolute privilege and an honor to hear Brother X. The only thing now we need is Sister Sari to show up, and then we'll really have the kind of trifecta that is needed to put our people on notice. Listen, you know, you were talking earlier about these anarchists, Antifa, and the rest of these characters in play. I read in the paper today about two young lawyers of minority descent, Harvard educated and everything. One lost their job. I don't know if the other one lost their job. But the fool go out there and throw a cocktail in a car of Popo. And now they got federal charges against them. You know, this is the type of utter stupidity and ignorance that people do when they feel and think they have a position in this madness. And, you know, it's tragic that now you got these two individuals who could have been of an asset to our people. Life is now going to be utterly, utterly destroyed. Utterly destroyed. Now, here it is. The one guy was part of the city council, from what they're saying, down in Lower Manhattan. And for him to go and do something like this, something fundamentally has to be wrong. I don't know what to say. I'm just, in a sense, honestly dumbfounded by this individual doing this. Now, I mean, I can understand in him wanting to stand up, being felt defeated and all of these things because of what happened to Blood of Floyd. But the reality is, man, you're in a position to help your people. And you've now set yourself up to spend the rest of your life in a cage that you can't even handle. You now may be subjecting yourself to being somebody's girlfriend. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, people don't realize prison ain't an easy place to be. If you don't have the makeup for it, it can lead to some very serious things, physically and psychologically. But it's just sad that someone with that type of ability would go and throw a Molotov cocktail in a vehicle with four police officers. That's madness. There's no rationale for any type of behavior whatsoever for doing that. I mean, the revolutionaries, I don't think they were doing that. That's just something real, real sick and twisted that needs to be looked at and deemed as mentally ill. You got to be mentally ill as far as I'm concerned. What is the rationale, I want to know, for his behavior in doing something like that with the type of privilege that he has and he's exposed to? I could understand the white Karen, Becky, or whatever you want to call her, that did that thing in Central Park, calling him is a total social dynamic. One is of color and one is white. One is gaining some sort of privilege and one already has privilege. So, I mean, this is really, really serious to even deal with and to be able to witness and to see, man. It's kind of sad and tragic, man, if we really think about it. And, you know, I think one of your callers earlier had said that because of what's going on, hey, man, this thing's not getting no better. This thing's about to get worse. It can't get no better because too many people facing unemployment and not being able to be employed. And then you got a society that's not going to try and help them, like other countries have tried to help their people to survive the pandemic so that they could do what? Have the basics of being able to do what? Have shelter and to eat. Oh, if you ever see now a food line, it's crazy. I mean, I've drove past places with food lines. You know, I got a tenant that, you know, I'm here helping her feed her kid. I don't mind doing it because she's a good sister. And she deserves it. And her kid deserves it because he's a good kid. But, man, just imagine all of those that don't have nobody helping them, man, assisting them. And we're not the type of people, or we don't behave like it all the time, as the type of people that's going to look out for their brothers and their sisters. We heading for rough times, people. You know, Brother X talk about getting out of here. Hey, I can agree with that. You know, I mean, the brother was just eloquent as he always is. But until we get out of here, let's be in a position to show somebody some form of humanity to the point to where, as you know, they don't go hungry and they don't have to sleep out in the street. Because, you know, white folks right now don't care about you sleeping out in the street right now. Because, you know, the weather's nice, even though there's a pandemic. But, hey, in a couple of months, it's going to be cold again. You know what I mean? I mean, we gotta figure this thing out and try to not only save ourselves, but save our people. Because, you know, I love seeing them go out there and act a fool, you know, but the reality is, man, they ain't doing nothing but hurting themselves. The community is not ours. The buildings are not ours. But the reality is we are human beings and we have a responsibility to take care of one another and to make sure that one another at least is able to survive at this time and have some sort of decency and semblance of life as one moves forward, man. And, you know, it's tragic. It's really tragic, man, to know these two young people who have skills and who had the ability, if they were trained right, to basically help the community, are now going to be sitting in the 9-by-5 for damn near maybe the rest of their lives because they didn't understand totally what they was getting involved with and they were being manipulated by people when it's all said and done. Like the Occupy movement, if y'all remember, most of those devils went and got jobs. Remember that. Always remember that. Most of them white devils went and got jobs. Their whiteness came into play after it was all said and done. Never forget that. Thank you, brother. Hey, listen, enjoy the rest of your evening. I heard the good and the bad news. That it looks like your boy Franklin Jones has decided to go bye-bye again. He'll be all right. He's the teacher, as he says. Have a good weekend, brother. Brother Richard.
All right. Yes, sir.
Let me ask you, Richard, how have you been, man? Have you been working for the daddy, or are you working for home for the daddy, or the daddy calling you in to show your face every now and then?
I'm home.
Okay, good, man. Okay, good. Take care of yourself and be good. Because listen, I know you know Rich Elliott. He don't mind being out of this thing because you know he having lattes and you know all of this good stuff, reading books. And,
yeah, I know.
You know having practicing tea.
Yeah, right.
You know, Richard is shambling. Richard is you know he don't have no TV to watch. I mean, Richard is really in dire straits, Elliot. You may have to invite him over for some tea and crumpets.
Yeah, okay.
Have a good night, my great brothers.
Right. Peace.
I know.
Richard, interesting dialogue today with the Time for Awakening audience and even some of the ones that didn't get on. I don't know whether they had stepped away from their phone or whatever, but it was interesting. It's always interesting when we go on open forum and talk with the listeners.
Yes, definitely.
Before we leave tonight, I want to go over the lineup again on Time for An Awakening Media. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting dialogue and guests on African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. On Tuesday, later on that Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for An Awakening Media. Every first and third Monday of every month, Conversation Reparations and Cobra's program. And they'll be on tomorrow. That's the first Monday in the month. Conversation Reparations from 9 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media on Mondays. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media. And then on Saturdays, he doubles back for African Perspectives, for Black Reality Think Tank. And then the ladies kind of take over the hosting on the Saturdays program. And that's from 4 to 6 on Time for An Awakening Media. And on Fridays, Time for An Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care. Children.